Okay, so where are we, and who are you?
Well, we're back, I guess if you saw the earlier video, you're back in my office. I'm Paul Vick, I'm a technical lead for Visual Basic, compiler and language.
I'm Amanda Silver, I'm the program manager on the compiler and language.
And what are we going to talk about and get demos of today?
We're going to talk about Phoebe 9.
Right, some future ideas we're having for where the Visual Basic language might go. Not attached to any particular release at this point yet, but definitely some things that we think will be pretty exciting to people and things that will be pretty big features.
This is beyond VB 2005.
Which... Yes, definitely. None of what you will see has anything to do with 2005 that's releasing in just a few months. So.
Got it. What did you both work on relative to VB 2005? So we know your background.
Both of us worked on the compiler and language. So all those great language features like generics and operator overloading and a lot of compiler features like, we worked with like the MS Build team to get MS Build out. Just some other nice things. We worked on performance a lot, both of us did. And also worked on improving references in the compiler.
Is the VB team pretty enthusiastic about VB 2005?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We think
definitely.
It's definitely the best release of VB yet.
Yeah, it's going to be big, very big.
So what are your high-level goals in the versions of VB beyond? Like the stuff we're going to talk about today, how did you get to what it is you're deciding as the priorities?
Well, a lot of what we're working on, a lot of the ideas we've been working on, and certainly probably they won't be the only ideas we work on for future versions, but a lot of it has to do with making data, working with data a lot easier. And sort of when we talk about this, there's sort of two problems that we end up talking about. And the first one is that when you're working with objects, anytime you want to get information out of objects, when you want to filter them, if you want to sort them, you want to do projections, you want to do sort of the querying capabilities over objects, you end up having to write an incredible amount of code today that's just boilerplate code that does the same thing over and over and over again. So how do we make it easier to extract and to work with information that are stored in objects? And then the other problem that we have is that there's a lot of information that lives in places other than the .NET framework. So, like, you have SQL databases, and you have XML documents and things like that. And the SQL world and the XML world sort of are alien environments compared to the .NET framework. And so what you end up having to do a lot of times is you sort of, you have your database, and you construct a SQL string, and then you sort of send it off to your SQL database, and either it comes back with a result set or it doesn't. You don't really get any help in building those queries, and you don't get much help interpreting the information that comes back. A lot of times it's really up to you to say, okay, I know what this data is going to look like, and here's what the structure is supposed to be. So really what we're looking at is also having ways for foreign data sources like XML and SQL to really work in a very easy and consistent way inside the .NET framework and in Visual Basic so that you get a lot of help building queries, you get a lot of feedback as you work with that data, and it's not just something where you.
So what did you look at and tap into when you went out and investigated what you could do, how you could do it?
Well, I mean, we talked to a lot of customers, and one of the customers that we talked to, who we actually talk to regularly, came in and right where you're sitting said something that I think is stuck in both of our minds, which is that he's been writing the same application for the last 20 years, basically, over and over and over again for different clients, and that he's still writing a lot of the glue code that he needs to write to do data access. So that kind of stuck in our minds and, I think is a reminder of what our goal is.
So VB's never had, like, an integrated data-centric programming language. It's more using objects, ADO, ADO.NET, external. Is that
right, exactly.
You're thinking of more of a tighter integration.
Right, exactly. Like, actually, before I worked on Visual Basic, I worked on Access. So, yeah, I mean, spent a lot of time with the various ADO, DAO, RDO, the sort of the alphabet soup of data access. And really what we didn't want to do this time was come up with another O acronym. We didn't want another ADO.net. We wanted to build on top of the existing data story and make it very additive rather than, giving something to people that's totally new that they have to learn.
Were there some research projects or even other products of Microsoft's that you looked at closely to get good ideas or leverage?
Well, sure. I mean, I think that we really... a lot of what we're showing today is a part of a larger sort of initiative on the .NET platform, among the .NET languages and other component vendors. And so it's really been a broad-based effort for a lot of things. So we've worked with the other languages, C#. We've been working with, the SQL teams, the ADO.NET team, and we've, also been trying to sort of glean information from the Fox team that has, they sit on our floor, and they have a lot of really good experience dealing with data access and integrating that into the language, so we've been working with them. So there's really like a very broad set of people who've been involved with this across the company. So
are we going to see some demos?
Sure.
Let's stop talking. Let's demo. We love to hear ourselves talk.
Are there separate categories of topics of things you're going to show?
Separate categories?
Yeah, like we're talking data language now, but is there other things?
Well, so what I'm going to show first is basically the building blocks that kind of build up the language integrated query capabilities in Visual Basic, in the next version of Visual Basic. So
you'll identify what things are language specific and what things are like framework generic in a sense of what any .NET language could tap into versus what's specific to the VB language.
Well, it's an interesting kind of tension because there are basically, I guess, is it seven features or six or seven features that kind of are required, a required base for a language to implement to be able to hook into what we call the .NET language integrated query framework. Hopefully they're coming up with a shorter name. Marketing's coming up with a shorter name, but that's what we've been calling it so far. And what I'm going to show you is basically VB's kind of flavor of those language features. And then there are some language features that I'll show you at the end of this session that are unique to VB.
Got it.
Yeah, probably what it's easiest is to just go through the demo first.
Right.
And then we can talk a little bit about how all the pieces fit together.
So. Great.
Okay, so what I'm going to open right now is really just a console application. Opened the wrong file. So to start with, this really is, even though I have other files in there, I'm not even referencing them because this submain that you see here is actually the submain that I'm calling. So those other files that you see, those are object, don't look behind the curtain yet. But what I'm going to show you first is basically one feature called type inference. So what you see here is that I'm just going to type dim int equals 1. And when I mouse over it, you see that the tooltip there, that might be a little bit small, but the tooltip there shows that it's dim int as integer. And so basically what we're doing is we're inferring from what's on the right-hand side of the statement to determine what the type of int is. And then similarly, if I went, dim dum equals 1.2, you see when I mouse over that it's a double in that case.
And it is worth noting that this isn't actually any new syntax. That actually right now in Visual Basic 2005 today, you can type that in. It's just that it will be always typed as object. So it's sort of an extension to an existing feature that we have in the language already.
And you could always go back and say, I actually want this to be typed as object by just saying as object, like that. But if you omit it, then it'll infer that it's typed as integer. Then if I basically say that, I have a string, you'll see that it'll infer that it's a string. And then it even goes into arrays. So if I say dim int array, as, you know, 1, 2, 3 using array initializers, then it actually infers that it's an integer array in that case. And because a lot of VB users like to put the integer decoration on the variable, that works too. So we'll still infer that that's an integer array in that case. Same goes for other array types. So if I say it's a string array, and then I create, you know, Barney, Fred, and Wilma. Oops. You see that that's a string array. And then I can also create an array of arrays. So I can go string array, and, you know, silly variable names for the time being, but I could say Barney, Fred, and then I could say George and Elroy. Oops. There we go. And in that case, you see that it's a multi-dimensional array of string that's inferred. And similarly, so that we kind of get the best experience for late binding as well, if I'm just naming this variable object array because that's what it's going to be, but if I have items that are of different types, then you see that what's inferred is actually an object array instead of just being an array. We actually infer that it's an object array so that you can kind of get, you know, indexing into it.
Now, one thing that we're actually considering that we can't actually show off today, but is that now that once we have array type inferencing, what we'd like to do is be able to. Right now, you can say dim object array. You have the curly braces, and that only works when you're initializing a local. But we're definitely talking about the ability just to be able to anywhere in any expression context be able to just have a curly brace and then a list of values and another curly brace, and that will automatically create an array of an inferred type. So essentially, you get sort of array literals that you'd be able, anytime you want to create an array, you don't have to say, you know, new integer, blah, 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 blah. It'll just figure it out for you. So
when we're talking about data-centric programming, it's not just an external data source like SQL Server. It's about working with any types of data, XML,
right.
Arrays,
right.
Enum.
Right. So what we're focused on right now mainly are three data types. One is, you know, objects that exist in memory as CLR data types. Another is XML that exists as XML files on disks or somewhere. And the third is data that's in databases that are kind of remote.
Right. I mean, if you look at a lot of existing products, there are a lot of products that do sort of maybe one of those areas well. So they do relational queries well, they do XML queries well, they do objects well, but there's no sort of product so far that's really spanned all three areas so that it's sort of a very consistent story that, you know, once you know how to do one, you can do all the others and they all work the same, all at the same time.
And what we'd like to provide is kind of like the same experience for working with all three of those places where data can be persistent.
Got it.
So the next feature that I'm going to show you is another kind of building block for language-integrated query, and that's structure initializers. So I need to basically have a type. I'm just going to pull on this customer type that I've kind of pre-canned. And I pulled it into the wrong place. So let's copy that.
I heard you code faster if you're sitting in Paul Vick's chair.
Maybe. It's the lucky chair.
Doesn't seem to make me code faster, so.
So now what you can see is that I can use this bracket syntax, and I can assign to the properties of the customer. Y'all think I'm going to give you my address, huh? So what's happening in that case is that basically we're calling the parameterless constructor of the customer object, and then we're calling the name property of the customer object and assigning Amanda to it in this case. So if I were to, you know, just do message box cust.name,
we would see probably Amanda pop up.
Fill the dead silence. Ooh, while...
There we go. Amanda just popped up.
Yep.
Now, the syntax that you see here for the structure initializers is something that we're still kind of toying with. We're also considering another syntax for the structure initializers, and that's something that's a little bit more similar to what you see with the with statement. So I'm just going to comment out this code right here and copy it and paste it below. Actually, let's do this so that you see what's actually implemented in the compiler versus what we're kind of talking about. And that would just be where I would go dot name equals quote Amanda and then dot address. And then basically I wouldn't do the named parameter assignment, style assignment. I'd use the with style property access and then just assign it.
So you're showing something in a comment that's a possible prototype, but the compiler's not.
Yeah, so that right now this prototype compiler uses the syntax that's similar to named parameter assignment. But we're also considering another syntax that's kind of also similar to other Visual Basic concepts, and that's the syntax that you see commented here that uses something that's kind of similar to a with statement.
And the advantage of using a with style syntax is that it allows you, then you can, you know, you could have arbitrary expressions after the dot, so you could access properties that have parameters, you could have, you know, can index into things, you could call methods, it becomes much more flexible, but there are limitations as well. So, anyway, it's one of those things we're kind of working through.
Right.
So now the next feature is, I'm just going to show you kind of like a simple query. So I'm going to dim primes array. Now, every time I show this, I get into a debate with whoever I'm showing this to over whether or not one is actually a prime number. What do you guys think?
You know, I'm agnostic on that position. I forget. I was never enough of a math geek to... Wasn't a prime divisible by itself in one, and one is certainly only divisible by itself in one.
So now what I'm going to show is basically how to get the primes over five. So I have an array, of numbers in this case, and I want to filter them to only find the numbers that are over five. So I just type select, and then you see that what pops up is IntelliSense, and the IntelliSense includes star. So if I choose star, that's just going to choose whatever is the element type of the collection that I'm querying over. So in this case, it would be an array. And then the result would be a collection in this case, the item type is an integer, and the result of this query would be a collection of integers. So select star from primes. And then I can use the filter to say where item, and item refers to the row that we're kind of iterating over as we execute the filter, is greater than 5. And this is another thing that we're still kind of toying with. We're not sure yet if we're going to call that item or it. It's just something that's still up for debate. So then I can basically print it, and right now I'm just going to use something that I've written to print it. SQL debug. List.
What namespace are we looking at here?
The namespace is just something that's kind of it's a byproduct of the prototype, but I'm just using it to print the results.
But it is part of the new stuff, right?
Right. Yes, it is. But it's not something that we're going to ship. It's really just something that we just implemented just to.
Yeah, probably actually is a good point to sort of put a standard disclaimer, which is that a lot of this stuff is so bleeding edge that by the time we actually ship, it could, you know, look very different. There could be different names for things. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of these things we expect will stay the way that they are, but, you know, there's a lot of customer feedback that we expect from the PDC and every...
That's one of the reasons that we want to talk about this stuff so early is because we really feel the need to incorporate the customer feedback into the technology.
Am I right in saying it's the objectives and scenarios that you're trying to solve is what your message is,
right,
more than the actual... you know, bracket syntax versus something
else.
Don't get too hung up on the syntax.
Definitely. although, you know, we would like feedback on the on the syntax itself, too. So
the BB team's never been this transparent in showing stuff this early on a new version, have they? So far out? I mean,
no. I don't think so.
I don't know that we've
shown mass audience
and stuff.
Yeah.
One of the things that enables us to do this is that we really did a big push to make sure that what we're showing you is, you know, covered and you know,
like at the PDC conference.
Yeah, exactly. So because we knew that the PDC was coming up, we made a big push to make sure that we could actually talk about all this stuff.
It seems that just showing that one line of code there with the select statement opens up a huge new door to programming in Visual Basic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is, I mean, on the one hand, it seems like, you know, I think the longer you work with it, it becomes more like, oh, yeah, it's just SQL language. But, I mean, it just starts to affect the way that you program. Like, you know, just, I mean, as I start to work through my, you know, my own examples of programs, it's like, oh, yeah, I could just query here. It's just, it fundamentally changes the way that you write programs, I think.
You know, what's really interesting, too, is that I think that in a lot of ways, search and the search paradigm that everybody's so used to now is changing the way that people think about computers and data that's on computers. And this summer, for example, I had four interns who were working with me, and the way that they approached writing this application that they were working on was completely search-centric and query-centric. And it's really interesting because they had absolutely no background in programming when they first got here. And so it's really just by virtue of being a user today that they think about the computer and from the perspective of query. So what you see on the screen now is basically, this is like a table being printed, but it's basically all of the prime numbers that are over 5. So you see that's index 4. And it's item 7, the value is 7, so it shows 7, 11, and 13, and the indices are 4, 5, and 6. So that's kind of like the most basic query in a nutshell.
I assume that you can have all kinds of data sources in the from clause?
Right. So one of the things that I'll show you in a minute is querying over processes, but I could... processes that I get from calling system.diagnostics.process.getProcesses. But I could just as easily, you know, get objects from the file system or objects that represent registry keys or...
And then also part of the sort of language integrated query project is also two new sets of APIs that allow you to query over XML data and relational data as well, SQL data. So by giving you new object models that represent those kinds of data. So
what data types are allowed in the from clause? You mentioned array. Do you have a list off the top of your head? What you're thinking?
Well, the interesting thing is that for right now there's a limited set because we're in an early prototype. But basically, what will happen is there'll be a specific pattern that any object can implement, a specific pattern of APIs. And once you implement those APIs, you participate in query. Now, there will be a standard set of APIs that work over anything that implements IEnumerable, the generic IEnumerable interface. So if you implement that interface, you're automatically queryable. Anything that implements IEnumerable will be queryable out of the box. Now, let's say that you're something else, that you don't implement IEnumerable, but you do have information that you want to allow querying over, then all you have to do is implement these standard set of APIs, and then you automatically become queryable in the syntax.
You're referring to a provider, not the average developer? You say implement these interfaces?
Because we implement the pattern of the standard query operators over all collection types in the .NET frameworks and over the two paradigms that we think are kind of like the most commonly needed, XML and remote data, we don't think that it's going to be really common for users to implement their own query pattern. But it's possible. It's completely open.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it's like probably 95% of the world will be covered by the implementations over iEnumerable. Mm-hmm. And then there will be the small 5% of the world that isn't going to be sufficient or they need to do something. And then it'll be totally documented and available for them as well.
So extensibility is like a key thing so that you don't get locked in just on certain ones.
Exactly. And that's really, I mean, a key point of this is not to tie the language into any particular implementation of querying or tie...
Or data source or anything.
Exactly.
So in this query, you could imagine that what's in the from could actually be replaced by, say, like a customer collection, right?
I can imagine that.
And if I were to switch this to be, you know, customer col, custcol, where, you know, name, what's something on string? Is it like contains dot contains?
You could just use the like operator.
Oh, yeah, name.
Since we are in a DB, after all.
Like Amanda. And then you can imagine that I could use the features above. I'm just going to comment this out again because I don't have a customer collection here. But you can imagine that I could use the features above, the type inference and the structure initializers, to actually create, you know, a collection that's from, and now I'm going to name the row cust in custcol, so the customer collection. Cust.name. And then that would basically project the name property for all of the names that are like Amanda to the result set.
Would you be getting some autocomplete IntelliSense if this was all
wired up
and declared?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's another thing that's kind of like an aspect of the prototype is that, you know, a lot of what we're implementing is supported in the language first, and then we kind of figure out what exactly the IntelliSense and stuff needs to happen afterwards. For the most part, though, we try to develop them side by side because IntelliSense is so ingrained with the Visual Basic experience.
Right.
But you were also going to say about, I'm assuming, about like kind of strong typing and...
Yeah, and I don't know what I was going to say now, but...
I work with Paul a lot, but kind of the whole point, right, of being able to have different things in the from clause is that that's a type as far as the compiler is concerned, and so the properties that exist on that type, we can you know, expose all of this IntelliSense in the construction of your query. So, for example, if I typed cust here and then typed dot, I would see, you know, name and address show up.
Right.
And then also you would get errors as well if you said, you know, select name, customer dot age, and there was no age column then.
Right.
Or age field.
So now I can move into more of a deeper query.
Sounds good.
Application. Okay.
I've been holding back on the questions. We'll see the demos.
So I'm just going to open this task manager utility that I've been writing. So basically what I wrote is something that's supposed to look pretty much like this. So what you see is that in the applications tab, I see tasks. So those are all of the processes that I have open that have main windows. And you see that there's a status associated with it.
So this Windows Task Manager is not some real Windows utility. It's something you wrote in VB.
No. This Windows Task Manager that I'm showing you is kind of to show you what I'm shooting for with this sample app.
Okay.
That, there. Yeah.
You got me really impressed. Wow, yeah. Exactly like the real thing, doesn't it?
You're showing me what you go
through. Actually, it looks very similar to the real thing, too.
I just wanted to be clear about that.
And then the processes shows the image name and the process ID and the username and blah, 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 blah.
So it's like that old line, it wasn't written in VB, but it could have been.
Basically, what I'm going to do is show the queries that kind of make up that application. So now if we go into the main form, color here, you see that, like I said before, I'm just going to query over the processes. So, yeah. You know, on this VPC, I rarely get the backup key to work.
And just so everybody knows, when you say the acronym VPC, what are you referring to?
Virtual PC, so it's a Microsoft application that allows me to have an OS on disk and just load the OS.
And different versions, it's great for beta or just...
Well, it's great for us because we rev our bits so regularly that I can just copy a brand new OS really quickly. It's just a file transfer, and then I can slap on some new bits onto it.
Well, I've talked to developers working with non-beta that actually use different VPCs to develop for different clients. So it's like having multiple machines with one notebook computer or something.
Yeah, it's great. So dim application, so now I'm going to select, and in this case I'm just going to choose star for the time being, from process.getProcesses. So you'll see that I actually have system.diagnostics imported at the top there.
Is that how it became in the dropdown?
Right. And so for right now what we have is I basically named the row in the processes collection that gets returned prox, and I do that by using the aliasing syntax that's very similar to SQL. We're also considering introducing another syntax where instead of doing that, I would say prox in process.getProcesses. But for now, the latter is what the prototype has implemented. Actually, Paul is working on, as we speak, kind of changing the prototype. So, so now I'm basically querying over the process collection that gets returned, and I can refer to prox.item.mainWindowTitle to get the main window title, and I can say as task to name the column that's returned. And what you see when I press play, I just need to print this, actually. So I'm just going to copy some code to print it. What I do there is I basically have a data grid that's in the WinForm, and then I set the data source of the data grid to be the result set of the query. Now I'm just going to press play. And what you see here is that we have a row for basically every single process that's running on the machine. And because some of them don't have main windows, there are some that kind of are empty. So now let's filter that query to just get those that have main window titles. Where prox.item.mainWindowTitle.
Looks like we're seeing some good examples of the IntelliSense in the select command.
Yep. So now if we play that again, now you see that we only see those that have a main window title. So the top one represents this Visual Studio that's running the application, and the one below represents the task manager that is the application that I'm actually running. And then to get the status, I can basically just add a comma on there and say prox.item. And actually, this is where I basically... So basically, what I can have in the select statement is pretty much any Visual Basic expression. So what I'm going to do here is call another function that I have defined in the project. So you see, this is just a form, and you see that on the form I have this function called processStatus, which takes a Boolean that represents the status of the process and returns a friendly string to show in the data grid. So what I'm going to do here is pass in the props.item, the responding property of the process, and I'm going to name that column status. And I'm just going to press play now. And now you see that we actually have the status. And if one of those was stalled, it would say stalled.
Now that's a simple join?
No, that's not actually, I'm not joining in this case.
Is
because
it the same table?
Because it's all using, it's all basically querying and then projecting and filtering from the process collection.
Same collection.
That's returned from process.getProcesses. So now let's move into something a little bit more complex. And this actually, I think, shows kind of like the power of query. Because, well, basically it's not very many people have to interact with the process object very much. But I just was thinking, what's a good app that shows query? And Task Manager came to my mind. I use it all the time. Mm-hmm. But the process object doesn't have the owner property defined on it. And for writing the task manager, you really need the owner of the process because pretty much every window that we have here shows the username of the process. And then there's users back here. So I needed the username. So where can I get the username? And I basically wrote another function that uses WMI to get the owner of the process. And what we're doing here is we're just using the management object searcher to get basically the process ID and the owner name for all of the processes that are on the system. And then I construct a generic dictionary where the key is the process ID and the string, the value, is the owner name. So maybe I can write it on the board real quick to show you what we're going to get. But the dictionary is going to get filled with process IDs. So it's going to be like, 1033, and then it's going to be, Redmond Amanda S. And then you can imagine, let's say Paul is also logged on to that machine, so it's 3244, and that would be you, Redmond. Paul V. and so on. So there's one for like the local system, one for the system, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I get back from this function that I wrote. And now I'm going to use that function to populate a dropdown in the processes task manager tab. So now I'm just going to pull this from here. And what I'm doing here is I'm using the distinct query operator to get one row for each of the owners. So if we go back to the whiteboard for a minute, in the case where I showed you earlier, I had one process that represented Visual Studio, and then I had another process that represented the application that I was running. So I would end up with three, if Paul was actually also logged in, one that represented Visual Studio, and then another one that's like 1023 or something like that, that's also Redmond Amanda S, that represented that process. So what I want to do in the dropdown is show the list of users. So I need to get all of the distinct, I need to get an entry for each of the users in that collection. So that's what I'm doing with that query there. So select distinct, prop owners value, and then I'm just going to show the code. And just, again, just binding to the data source. And now what you see when I go to the processes, and then I open this dropdown, you see that I get an entry for each of the users that are logged in.
So both with this example and the previous one with the select, the code to do it before, like in even VB 2005, is some kind of walking with a for each and then
right.
running the if statements and then
yeah.
make it really add up.
Right.
both a lot of code, time, and even performance.
Right. Essentially, like with this, with query, I mean, the query syntax, you can state in one line what might take, you know, 50 lines or 20 lines or 30 lines of code in normal case. So it's really a way of stating very succinctly. And the other nice thing about it is that what the select statement represents is actually more like, for if you're familiar with SQL, it's more like a view rather than a cursor. So when she says, you know, x equals select whatever, that just represents sort of a query that's waiting to be executed. It doesn't actually get executed until you for each over it. So you can actually reuse that query again and again and again, and you can pass it around, and you can combine it with other queries, and it's very flexible in that regard. It's not, you know, it's, I don't know.
That's a great segue into the next demo.
Funny.
So what I'm going to do now is basically select a user from the dropdown, and I'm going to look at the process collection, and I'm going to select the processes that are owned by that user, and then show only those processes in the processes tab of this application. So you'll see right now I choose Amanda S and nothing appears because I haven't filled in that code. So, but I have filled in a little bit of code that basically, based on what's in the combo box, creates, you know, assigns a variable representing the username. So now what I'm going to do is insert a query that gets the process IDs for all of the processes that are owned by the selected user. So what you see here is that I'm doing a projection here. I'm getting the key from that process ID and owner name collection. And then I'm basically filtering them where the owner name is the same as this current selected user. And the current selected user is this variable that I assigned up here. Now this app that you see here, this is another kind of prototype. This is another prototype artifact. But what I'm going to do now is basically combine the result of this query and join it with another table. So basically what you see that I have in the from here is the process.getProcesses, and that returns the process collection. And another one is the user proc IDs, which is this query up here, the result of this query up here. And then I basically join them where the IDs are the same. And then I am projecting the process name, the username, the thread count, and the working set just for the purposes of the demo. And then I'm going to order by the thread count and the working set. And I'm just going to show the code real quick. Hit F5 again. Go to processes. Now let's see that pop up. So now those are all of the processes that are owned by me. And I can switch that to be, you know, the local system or something like that. That's a little slow. I should probably switch which event I'm switching on. But now you see that those are the processes that are owned by the local service owner.
It appears this enhances significantly working with data in .NET programming.
Yeah, I mean that's the goal.
I mean, it's a small sentence but a big statement.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it'll change the way people code in .NET.
I mean, that's what I was saying earlier. It just fundamentally changes the way that you think about working with any kind of information, because now since you can do it over anything, you know, any piece of information in your application suddenly becomes queryable.
One point of reference is, you know, in the 20 years of features enhancements to Visual Fox Pro and Fox Pro, when the select statement was added to language, it was probably the top three most significant enhancements of all time. It changed everything. So that's what we're seeing here with Visual Basic.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's funny. It's when I worked on Access, one of the things I worked on for a number of years was the query designer. So spent a lot of time typing SQL, and it's really amazing. Like, once you start to get into the mindset of all the things that you can do, and really what we're looking at is, you know, most of the basic relational sort of operations that SQL can support, and we're also talking about hierarchical operations because what we're working with is not just flat rectangular data like with SQL, but you're also dealing with things like XML or objects where a collection can contain another collection. And so once you have all those operations at your fingertips, just the ways in which you can manipulate your data just becomes really kind of impressive.
Currently, people do things like stored procedures or dealing with queries back in here. It brings your data manipulation locally.
Like, right, yeah, I mean, a lot of times you have to, sometimes, you know, if you have information that you need to work on, you know, you have to ship it out to SQL Server just so that you can get the querying, not because you have so much data that you really need a big server, but, you know, and so now you can really avoid a lot of that, so.
So is there more to show than beyond this?
Oh, yeah, I have plenty to show.
So we're going to have to switch the battery, and I'll hit pause briefly, and we'll pick back up right
sure.
here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're back recording with a fresh camera battery. Where were we?
So while the camera was off, we were talking about, you know, the fact that what I have here is a composed query of two queries that are executed in the same function, or that are constructed in the same function, and that the query to get all of the process IDs that are used, that are owned by a particular user, is probably pretty useful and something that we should factor out into another function that we can reuse. So what we did here is we just copied this query right here and basically just created a new function and then made the return type the result of the select itself. And then within the user and processes, I can just call the processes owned by function in the from. So basically what you see here is that I'm doing an inner join on the process.get processes, and then I'm calling this user-defined function that's essentially a parameterized query using the current selected user as the parameter. And then I'm joining on the IDs. And then also, if we reckon back to the other features that I was showing at the beginning of this demo, the type inference and the structure initializers, and kind of the concept of having expressions or initializers that can be embedded in expressions. You could imagine that this select right here, the projection that I do in here, I wouldn't necessarily have to do it in this way. I could just basically put this in some brackets and use thread count equals dot thread count equals. And then I could say, you know, working set dot working set equals. And then the result type would be essentially an anonymous type, a kind of made-up inferred type by the compiler that has a property called process name, and then in this case I'd go dot user, a property called user, where the value is the currently selected user. And then the thread count, and that's based on looking into the threads collection of the process and then counting the threads in that process, and then a property called working set.
How do you summarize what you have now compared to what you had before you made this change?
So basically it's the same thing, but you can imagine that I could use the structure initializer syntax to kind of conceive of the object that we're creating in the projection a little bit easier.
Does this have to do with external data types? I mean, how do you describe the benefit of doing it this way you just showed us versus the other way?
it's essentially the same thing. It's just using the syntax that's more akin to the syntax that we have for structure.
It's just an alternate syntax.
Yeah.
No benefit one way or the other, or?
It's the same functionality.
I see.
Yeah.
Got it.
So now let's move into some XML features. You want to talk a little bit about XML or something?
Well, yeah.
What's the goal of what we're about to see? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, probably we'll have to do actually a bit more. I think it'd be great to do a longer, even longer video on just the XML stuff specifically. But we should talk about it a little bit now.
When people think programming with XML, they probably in like DB today, they'd say use system.xml.
Right.
You can use the reader or something to grab some XML parts through it, walk through it with for each whatever, and then maybe to create it, they'd either talk to that object model or to actually build up a string manually.
Right, and what today, so there's sort of two levels of what we're going to be talking about. There's sort of the lower level stuff, which is the what's being called Xlink, so it's the XML version of the language integrated query. And that is basically two things. It's a set of query APIs, so just that allow you to query over an XML document, just like XQuery, but using the syntax. Just the syntax that we've just shown you. The other thing, though, is it's also a new XML document object model, a new set of objects that you can use to work with XML. And we're not really going to go into that much today, but basically it makes working with XML much easier in an object-oriented way.
Is it a replacement to system.xml or something that's built on top of it?
To be honest, I'm not...
I think it's built on top of it, but I'm not really sure either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We're the language part. We don't build the library.
We think more about, okay, here's a library. Now, what can we do with it?
But is the goal here to make it working with XML, creating, parsing, reading much easier?
Yes. And so then what we're doing is, what we're going to share today, is we're taking the Xlink APIs, the querying and the new document object model that they built, and then we're adding language features on top of it that make working with XML really easy, because XML is becoming sort of an integral part of any program that works with data. You have to
And does some of this relate to what we just saw with the SQL language?
Yeah, so one of the things that the Xlink API does is it implements the .NET language integrated query standard sequence operator pattern, or that long name that I was talking about earlier, but it basically implements the pattern of APIs that allow us to use the same query syntax over the XML, DOM, essentially.
So really this whole XML type is showing the extensibility of what the architecture really set off with the select.
Sorry?
Well, because... Now, originally, the very first prototype, you probably didn't have this XML ability. But then you added it, had it implement the right interfaces and so forth, and now it's becoming yet another
source. So one of the things that basically that makes this really easy in terms of providing a better support in the language for it is that this particular API for accessing XML is element-focused instead of being document-centric. So with the XML DOM, it's document-centric. You have to construct an XML document, and then every node that you create in that document has to kind of have a document that's its owner. And
it can be more fragment-oriented.
With this, it can be much more, element-oriented, and some of those elements can contain, fragments. So
what I'm going to show you first is there's basically two features that we expose that are kind of on top of the XML the Xlink API. So the first is XML literals, so in people collection. Now what I'm going to do is I'm basically going to assign this people collection variable to a chunk of XML. So I'm just going to really write some XML here. Now again, what you see here is the side effect of working with prototype bits is that we don't have great IDE support yet, but we're working on that. So I'm just going to create a people collection here. So I have person, and then I'm going to create birth date. So that's an XML attribute. And the birth date, in this case, I'm going to use a date literal.
A Visual Basic.
A Visual Basic date literal.
So putting this XML in line is like a whole new concept. Program, right? I mean, doesn't look like anything we've seen before, where you can just embed XML right in your source like that.
Certainly in Visual Basic.
Yeah.
But so just to kind of drive home the point that this can be any Visual Basic expression, I'm going to call Microsoft.visualbasic.today for the birthday. And that can be all Vic.
Shouldn't it be today minus one?
Oh, yeah, that's born yesterday. Right, exactly. So now what you see is that I can basically go console.writeLine, and I can just write the people collection. Just to make it stop, I'll just read line. And what you see is spit is the XML, basically, that I just wrote in Visual Basic. And the other thing is that you'll note that the literal is expanded to the default date format. And now you guys all know basically what time it is and what date it is. So you see that it's 9/2, it's September 2nd, because the today was evaluated and inserted into the XML. The other thing that you'll note is that when I mouse over this, so again, with type inference, we basically infer from the right-hand side what the type of the people collection should be. And in this case, you see that it's an X element.
And then, I don't know if you're going to show this, like what the underlying type is.
Sure, talk about it.
I mean, basically, all that is what you see is you see the literal, but what it really translates to is just a series of constructor calls to XLink API. So, you know, it says people collection, it's new X element, people, it has a new X element, a person, and that sort of thing. So all it is that there's no magic in the sense of, you know, specific VB libraries or anything like that. It just turns into direct calls to standard .NET APIs to create standard .NET objects that you can work with in any way and that any other language is going to recognize. So,
got it?
I just realized how much of a public access thing Channel 9 must kind of feel like in some ways. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's kind of like a Wayne and Garth kind of moment. but, okay, so the next feature is late binding over XML.
We need a way for them to all reply back. We're not worthy. By the way, I have a good question for you.
Yeah.
How does what we're seeing here with all this cool XML programming native to language relate to the research project that evolved from X Sharp, then Xen, and now C Omega? How does this relate? Someone that might have read about that.
Well, it's definitely. I mean, in terms of sharing like actual code, zero. But a lot of the, like, you know, it's kind of, it's kind of great. I feel bad about us talking about it on video without him. But Eric Meyer, who was in one of the other videos, has been very involved in both the Xen, X Sharp, whatever you, X Omega, no, not X.
C Omega,
whatever. He was very involved in that effort and has been very involved in doing a lot of these features that we're showing right now, helping with the design and implementation.
I assume creating those research projects greatly helped in the evolution of where we are today and seeing it through
definitely.
In Visual Basic to deliver it as a.
But I think actually, you know, probably earlier when we were talking about where the ideas came from, I think I unfairly blanked on that definitely the C Omega project is definitely one of those sources of ideas and actually people as well that have been working on this project. So
cool.
So now the next feature is basically late binding over XML. So now I'm just going to say for each peep in people collection, and then I'm going to use a new operator dot dot dot. And then I'm going to access all of the people, each person in that people collection. So what that dot, dot, dot operator is it calls the descendants function in the XLink API, and it basically gets all of the XML elements that are descendants of the root node, the people collection, that are a person, essentially. And then I'm going to just write to the console, birthday.
So there's no XPath here. It's an alternative way of
it's
querying an XML document.
Yeah, it's an alternative syntax for querying an XML.
Some would say more simple.
So I'm going to use string replacement here because it hasn't implemented the operator we need yet. But and then I'm going to look for the birth date attribute, and I'm going to print that to the console. And now I'm just going to move that down here. Display. And so what you see here is, again, we printed out the people collection that I authored earlier, and then you see that the two birthdays that are contained in there are repeated and printed to the console again. So now let's get into something a little bit more realistic and bigger. And let's also kind of compare, you know, how it's done today, how it's done with the underlying API, and how it's done with these two features that I just showed you. So I'm just going to drag and drop this right here. And what we do in this case is we're essentially calling the same function over and over again using different APIs and, in one case, different syntax for doing exactly the same thing. So first we're going to start with the XML DOM. So that's the code that's right here. So what you see again, like I was talking about earlier, is that the XML DOM that exists today is document-centric. So I have to create everything in the context of an XML document. So you see that I create this new PO, and that's an XML document, and then I have to create an element that represents the purchase order. And what I'm trying to emulate in this case, I'll show you the code that I'm trying to show you. Is this code. So you can imagine, you know, there's a lot of times where you just get handed a little XML file and you need to copy that XML file in what you generate. So this is kind of the XML that I'm attempting to write.
Generate.
To generate, exactly. So I have to create an element that represents the purchase order, and then I need to append all of the children with the order date, and then...
So this is code that works in Visual Basic today, 2005.
In Widby. Yeah.
Right, just using the native XML APIs.
Right,
exactly.
So people watching should kind of memorize in their head what they see now and compare it to what they're about
to see. Exactly. And then you see at the bottom that to... Basically what I want to do is iterate over the result set. And I want to take the cost of each of the items in the order, and I want to combine them to figure out what the total is. So you see that I need to call item, and then I need to get the price, and then I need to get the quantity, and then I can actually do the result. And you'll also see that I for each over that result set. So now let's move into the XLink API. So what you see here is that, first of all, there's no top-level document that I have to create. Again, it's element-centric. So I create this top-level element, the purchase order, that represents the element. And then I create an attribute within that, and I create a collection of elements. And what you see here is essentially a very large parameterized constructor. So this sub-new has a purchase order that's the name of the XML element, and then all of these sub-news that are below are basically called within the constructor. So as arguments to the constructor, we call all of these other constructors to create that element object. Again, I'm also using strings in this case, so it doesn't feel very much like creating your standard object. It's really like I have to create this XML object independently. And then down here, again, I'm just querying over and looking at all of the elements, and then I'm getting the price and the quantity, and I'm multiplying them to figure out what the total is. So now let's move into the Visual Basic XML integration. So first of all, you'll see that there's a lot less code. Now, one of the reasons that there's a lot less code is because I haven't really filled out some of the code.
Now, to be clear, this is the future Visual Basic, right here, we're about to see.
Yeah.
This isn't VB 2005.
Right. So what I'm going to do is literally copy the XML that's in the file that I have here, and I'm going to just paste it right here. Uh-oh. Hold on, let's open that in
Notepad.
Get it. The
RTF.
Yeah. Open Notepad. There we go. So now what you see is that, again, an X element is inferred from that. And like I showed you earlier, I can embed any Visual Basic expression anywhere in here. So I could create, I could just call Microsoft Visual Basic. No, actually, I don't. And then also, I can compute, because it's element-centered, I can compute the elements separately in other locations. I can compute them in separate functions. So what I'm going to do here is, just to demonstrate this, take build2, and I'm just going to take this little code snippet right here, and I'm going to insert that there, and then I'm going to take that little hole, and I'm going to insert the build2 variable.
Those of you who've used ASP.NET may recognize
or ASP even.
Yeah, the syntax.
Yep, so what we're doing there is basically inserting a variable into the XML document.
And, of course, that could be a function call, if just like ASP, like, just evaluate here and replace the result right there.
Yep, exactly. And then at the bottom, so I guess the code that I have here isn't using the late binding that we have. But let's just first show this. So this first one is the XML DOM, that the XML DOM example, and then it computes the total and shows the total. And the next one uses the XLink API. And you'll note that the date in this case is 1999-10, so it's the same date that you're used to, just so that you can distinguish between that and the Visual Basic one. So now what you see is that the order date is the date that's returned from the Visual Basic dot today function. And then with the late binding, I should be able to say for each item in... Oops, need to stop that. Price equals item dot price. So what that does is it calls the element function to get the price, all elements that are named price, and then this gets quantity.
So what are you changing here overall? What are you changing? You're rewriting this?
So what I'm doing in this case is I'm basically calling the XML late binding to look into the XML document.
Rather than walking through it.
Right, okay. Exactly. And get the elements that are named price.
I guess what it's good here is you can see the way you would have to do it before, and now you're showing the way you can do it in the future.
Right. And I think what I have to do is get the elements collection in this case. So. And now I need to cast it. Shoot, this build doesn't have the great late binding support.
You can certainly type out what it's going to look like. Because the main thing is for us to preview what we're working on.
What it looks like is this. But it's not going to work right now because I don't have this most recent bits installed on this machine.
But you get a good idea.
Yeah,
I can see that everything you've shown, it's all leading up to one thing building on top of the other. At the very beginning, it's the simple array, and then you have the whole link engine, and then you have the XML type within the engine.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a little disappointing because I'd rather show it working.
Now, are there any other really cool demos that highlight some of this stuff? Do you have any other things that's like pre-canned?
You want more?
I think one more to kind of summarize, you know, something you've already written.
Actually, I don't have anything else kind of pre-canned in my archive.
Well, we will soon, I assume.
Well, one of the things that you know, first of all, I need to get the most recent bits on this VPC, and also Paul will get the new query syntax implemented. And then we're working on getting everybody some previews around the PDC.
Now, what happens if someone doesn't go to PDC? Is there something planned?
Yeah, there'll be stuff on the web available.
Like some community preview down the road.
Yeah,
and it'll also be, you know, because this is very new stuff, we'll be rolling more stuff out as it comes online to for people to preview.
Right.
So off of the Visual Basic page, which I'm assuming everybody's familiar with, msdn.microsoft.com, /vbasic, you'll see there's a VB Futures link that'll be posted.
And after PDC, during PDC?
Around the time of PDC. So that
around the time this video is up.
Right, when this video is there, the link should be there.
So. Got it. Anything else you want to summarize and all this? You seem pretty excited about working
great.
On this.
It's great. It's been a lot of fun, and it's going to be, I mean, we've still got more to do, so.
I mean, the excitement of VB 2005 is pretty high, but then you add this to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can just see the current status and the road ahead.
We're really psyched about 2005. It's a great product. I think there are a lot of great features in there, and I think it's the most productive version of Visual Basic ever.
Big enhancements.
Yeah. I'm going to say again, I really like code snippets. And generics are great.
Actually, you know, it's funny. I've been doing some samples and preparing demos using code snippets. Very useful.
Yeah.
Great. Well, all right. Thanks, Bo.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Talk to you later.
All righty.